Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're going to talk about the foreclosure crisis. I don't know. I'm not going to make the call on that one. My two guests with me in the studio right now, I hope they can help me. Mike Edelman, Vice President of State Government Relations for the Ohio Bankers League. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And that means you're a lobbyist.
I am.
I always say, you know, the state government relations is nice. Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Good to see you again.
You're also a lobbyist, though, aren't you?
Technically speaking.
Yeah.
I'm a different kind of lobbyist than Mike is.
Well,
I stand up for the good causes.
Yeah. I'm on the side of the angels as well.
Yeah, it ought to be fun this hour, folks. I wanted to jump in with this and decided not to, but I do want to talk about a letter to a columnist in the Columbus Dispatch yesterday, real estate columnist Elise Glink. Fellow wrote in, he told her his story. He's middle class, suburban homeowners. They have a conventional prime loan, a jumbo loan, however, over $500,000. They have now hit the rocky shore of the foreclosure crisis. I guess they wrote to her, they wondered, his wife has a brain tumor. They have big debt, unexpected major health care bills, complicated by the fact that their house is now worth less than their mortgage. And all of this is pretty much sunk them. And what's more, Glink, when she responded to him, she was brutally frank, really. She said the couple doesn't qualify for government help with their mortgage because it's too big of a mortgage. I think the limit's around $400,000. So their only recourse was a loan modification by way of another government program. That, she said, is only if the lender is willing, which is a huge glitch, according to a lot of people, is that there has to be a willingness on the part of the lender to negotiate such things. That's what it, you know, those are the sort of things we're going to be talking about this hour. Joining us later, Aaron Marshall of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Statehouse reporter of Cleveland Plain Dealer. So, first of all, is there a crisis? Do we agree there's a crisis or not?
Well, we should agree there's a crisis. Ohio has experienced record levels of foreclosures for several years, and it's gotten to the point where in 2009, by the end of the third quarter, 15.3% of all homeowners with a mortgage were either 30 days late or more are already in foreclosure. That's almost one in six Ohioans.
Either delinquent or in foreclosure.
Right. And it just keeps growing. Even over the course of 2009, at the first quarter it was about 13%. At the second quarter it was about 14%. And by the end of the third quarter, it grown to 15.3. But that's on top of several years where Ohio was number one in the nation in foreclosures. Largely, this was fueled by the subprime lending fiasco where many lenders issued risky loans. And now we're seeing other factors that are actually starting to dominate the foreclosure crisis, which is that many people are underwater, like the couple you mentioned from mm-hmm. the story, meaning that they owe more on their home than their home's worth. And in Ohio, that's roughly a third of all homeowners. They owe more on their home in their mortgage than their home is worth. And also the factors that have sort of traditionally been a problem, unemployment, health care issues, sudden reduction in income. So it's really a tsunami of multiple factors that have led us to this situation. And I think what we want to talk about today is what are some common sense, practical approaches that we could employ mm-hmm. to get rid of unnecessary foreclosures. We're never going to get rid of foreclosures. It's always going to be a fact of life for some people.
The nature of the foreclosure, hasn't it actually leveled off at this point? We're not number one anymore. Ohio, the state of Ohio is 40th, 50th?
We're still listed in the top 10 or 12 states, but it's just that what I call the sand states, Florida, California, Nevada, many other states that had a big housing bubble. Well, when that bubble burst, they've just surged ahead of us. But our problem has been pretty on a consistent growth. I mean, in 08, we had about 85,000 foreclosures. 09, it looks like it's going to come in around 90,000 foreclosures statewide. So it's been, in the last few years, it's been going up some. I mean, at a significant but still not as bad as it has in some other states.
Well, but I think if you look at the reality track statistics, actually Ohio's foreclosures have gone down. I mean, 2009 versus 2008, statewide, they were down approximately 10%, while nationally foreclosures were up 21%. You look at places like Jacksonville, Florida, mm-hmm. as Bill mentioned, the Sand States, foreclosures up 59%. Phoenix up 39%. Las Vegas up 40-some percent. So, I mean, you look at Ohio, I really think things have stabilized and they've declined. I mean, the statistics bear that out. Important, as both of you have indicated, though, jobs. Jobs are key here because when we're talking about unfortunate life circumstances, you know, that's another thing. Health situations, death of the breadwinner. All of those come into play here. No wrongdoing on the part of those homeowners, but they've hit some unfortunate skid in their life.
Well, and on top of that, a lot of them are underwater. I mean, that's the phrase everyone's using, where they owe more on the house than they could sell it for right now, which means that they either have to walk away from their largest, for most people, their largest investment, or start keeping on something with no guarantee that there'll ever be a return.
See, but Ann, I think being underwater is largely irrelevant. I mean, you have various programs or advocating the need for the lender to reduce the mortgage payment just because it's underwater, I think, is irresponsible. That creates a moral hazard. I mean, a house in my own neighborhood, I mean, somebody walked away from it because he could no longer afford the mortgage payments. I think people need to, you know, continue to make those payments, you know, get their personal finances in order and not make the situation worse. Because who loses? It's the neighborhood that loses. It's the community that loses. Deterioration decreases our property values. People walking away from their properties means those taxes aren't going to be paid, and that, you know, creates challenges for our school districts and other governmental entities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the foreclosure crisis, depending on how you talk about it and define it. My guest, Bill Faith, from COHIO, Executive Director of COHIO, and also Mike Edelman of the Ohio Bankers League, Vice President. All right. You know, Mike, you just did a great job of talking about all of the problems that lead to this. But when let's take this gentleman whose wife has a brain tumor now, he probably needs cash. A lot of people would say, get out of the big fancy house, you know, reduce the cost of living for yourself so that you can concentrate on the things that are important. But he can't. His asset isn't worth what it was anymore. He could keep making those payments, but what about people who need to get out from under that? Normally, they would downsize.
Well, I think that the homeowners should use the same moral compass that the lenders use when they issued a lot of these loans, which is what's in their best financial interest. You know, so if the homeowner, if it makes more sense for them financially, then maybe they should just turn over the keys. I mean, there are easier ways to do that, like a short sale or working out some arrangement with the lender. But I think people really need to take a serious look at what's in their best financial interest when they find themselves in an underwater situation like that. Because if they could rent housing cheaper, if they are never going to recover their investment, I'm not sure it's in their best financial interest to continue to make payments on a mortgage that's beyond the value of their home.
What about the mediation idea that's been put forth by the federal government now? There's a program out there, but as Elise Glink said, it doesn't seem to be working at all.
Well, there's a couple of different things. The federal government's program is not working very well, but that's the loan modification program that has been pushed by the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And what it is, it's fundamentally a voluntary program on the part of the lender servicer to, you know, do a loan modification with the homeowner. But we're finding that very few of those modifications are getting done, at least on a permanent basis. So what the state is looking at doing are a few things that could be simple, sort of easy steps that have been proven to be more successful. One is mediation in court. You know, every one of these foreclosure cases will go to court sooner or later. So why not try to get the lender and the homeowner together, or the servicer and the homeowner together, and work out an arrangement so that they perhaps the homeowner can continue to stay in the home. So it's just sort of a slight timeout to say, let's see if something could be negotiated. What we find a lot of times in these foreclosure cases is the lawyers that are hired to represent the servicer don't even talk to the homeowner about making some sort of an arrangement. Perhaps some of the payment could be deferred. Perhaps the interest rate could be reduced. Some of the fees could be tacked on at the end of the mortgage or even forgiven. There's a variety of things they could do to work out an arrangement so that if the homeowner could get over this rough spot and remain in the home, and the investors of the mortgage can continue to receive a payment.
Mike, isn't the property more valuable occupied and being taken care of than it is foreclosed on and empty?
Certainly, and I think
to the lender.
Certainly, I think in just about every instance you could argue where that property value is better off having somebody in the property, somebody keeping the pipes warm and keeping the vagrants out. Unfortunately, though, there are many instances where bankers have talked about situations where, you know, people were in the home, very cantankerous relationship, as the homeowner becomes increasingly desperate, and they start to trash the property. So I think it's in everybody's best interest for Ohio's foreclosure process to be accelerated. Currently, it takes about a year and a half on average. That is just way too long. You've got a homeowner that probably is not able to make the mortgage payments. They're probably not keeping up on the maintenance on the property. That hurts their neighbors. It hurts the community as a whole. Going back to mediation, I think one of the main issues with mediation is what is there to work out in many instances? Less than 5% of the foreclosure filings have an answer. People understand job loss, death of the breadwinner, catastrophic health situation. They don't have the financial wherewithal anymore to remain a homeowner. So in many instances, there's nothing to mediate. There are some good programs out there. The Ohio Bankers League worked very hard with the Ohio Supreme Court a couple of years back to develop their pilot mediation program. And I think it has been faced with some success around the state. A couple of counties in particular, Claremont County, Richland County, have had very good programs.
Senator Bill 197, actually, Shannon Jones's bill, isn't that based or patterned after that a little bit? Except that it's mandatory?
It's mandatory. And that's, I think, a very important distinction. Mm-hmm. So now you are telling those lenders that have worked very hard with their borrowers that we're not going to regard that anymore. We're going to automatically take all those properties and put them in the mediation queue. It's going to have a significant unintended consequence of slowing down the foreclosure process. And in doing so, it would create a $500 foreclosure filing fee on top of every single foreclosure in the state of Ohio. Bill's number earlier, approximately 86,000 foreclosure filings back in 2008. That's a lot of money that would be created by this new tax on foreclosure filings.
How many foreclosures are pending now? Not including the delinquent. I mean, actual foreclosures.
Well,
what do we know about?
Despite what Mike said, we actually used the Mortgage Banker's own data, which shows that we're going to see around 90,000 foreclosures filed in Ohio last year.
So, Mike, what you're suggesting is let's speed up that process, and then instead of a year, having them resolved within a year, resolved how soon? And what would the impact be to all of a sudden have 90,000 families out of their homes in that short a period of time?
Well, great questions, Anne. There are a number of other states that are property states. They have a non-judicial process. West Virginia is one example where, you know, it's a contract. If you have not been able to live up to your contractual obligation, 90 days, that process begins to turn over the property, and you essentially walk into your lender or mail in the keys. I think, you know, there could be an issue if you all of a sudden have a real substantial number of houses that are turned in. But also, I think you've got a lot of people that are looking to purchase a home right now. So I think given time, all those things will balance out.
We got to take a quick break. My guests, Bill Faith of Cohio and Mike Edelman of the Ohio Bankers League. Joining us after the break, Aaron Marshall of the Columbus Bureau of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Yeah. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support during WOSU's recent winter membership drive. Your pledge helped make the drive a success. Your contributions keep classical music, NPR News, and local news on the radio for all of Central Ohio. We rely on you to keep this station strong and to fulfill your pledge. Thank you again for your generous support.
Support for WOSU comes from Thurber House, presenting evenings with author's guest Adriana Trigiani, reading from her latest novel, Brava Valentine, Wednesday, February 17th at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at thurberhouse.org.
24 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light snow, a total accumulation for today of 2 to 4 inches, and then another 1 to 2 inches of snow for tonight. You're listening to WOSU 820. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. Good morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the foreclosure crisis. My guests, Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and also Mike Adelman, Vice President of State Government Relations for the Ohio Bankers League. And on the phone with us, Aaron Marshall, Cleveland Plain Dealer Statehouse reporter. He's been covering the issue in the Ohio General Assembly. Thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Thank you, Ann. I hope you have your referee's jersey on there to keep Bill and Mike in their corners.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say. I was kind of hoping you would be here sitting between them. So I'm glad you brought that up. But there's no clenched fists that I could see right now. So I think we're pretty good. Aaron, why don't you give us a rundown on the three bills that everybody cares about right now?
Okay, Ann. There's three foreclosure bills that are related to foreclosure. They're all undergoing hearings right now in the Ohio Senate. The first bill is one that passed the Ohio House. It declares a six-month moratorium on foreclosures in Ohio, so none could be filed, a total freeze, a total timeout. There's a bill that would establish a mandatory mediation program. This is separate than
This is Senate Bill 197.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's sponsored by four Republican state senators. And then the third bill, which also passed the House, is Ted Celeste's bill, which give renters more rights with foreclosures, so that they would have notification that the home that they're renting is in foreclosure, and convert their rental agreements to month to month when that situation arises. Both the timeout, the foreclosure moratorium bill, and the rental rights bill both passed the Ohio House pretty much on party line votes, backed by Democrats, not so much by Republicans.
Mm-hmm. And now they're in the Senate Finance.
They're in the Senate Finance Committee. From what I've been able to tell, I think the six-month moratorium bill is pretty much dead in the Senate. I don't see a lot of interest from the Senate Finance Chair, John Kerry, or others in a moratorium. I think they feel like it might do more harm than good, and it's a little too radical for them. There is a part of that bill that requires mortgage servicers to obtain certificates of registration and sets business standards for them and responsibility to borrowers for them. And I think that there are some Republicans that like that service provider piece of that bill. So I think that part of it could move, and I think that it's possible that the mandatory mediation plan, which Senate Republicans are backing, or several Senate Republicans are backing, that could potentially move through the Senate at some point, too.
What about the renter's protection bill, the House Bill 9?
Well, it passed on pretty much a straight party line vote,
right,
on the House floor, and I haven't heard much from Republicans that's something that they're— Yeah. That they think is a big issue.
Never bodes well when it just does a party line vote in the House.
Exactly.
What is your sense, Aaron, about the legislature, particularly the Republicans, since the stall is occurring in a Republican-controlled Senate, about whether they think that there's a crisis?
Well, I think that everyone agrees that there's a lot of foreclosures that are going on. I mean, at one point here recently, we were number one in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're number one in the country anymore, but there's certainly a lot of these happening all across the state. But I think crisis is a word that you hear Democrats use, and it's not a word that you hear Republicans use. I think Republicans are just a lot more cautious in terms of getting in the middle of these complicated contractual, agreements. And I don't get a sense from them that they feel like the state is in a foreclosure crisis right now.
Okay, so Mike Adelman, the Ohio Bankers League, tell us first of all about House Bill 3. Obviously, you oppose the moratorium, and that looks like that's not going to move. But what about the regulation of the servicers?
And that's a great question. I believe that the servicer regulation is a piece worth looking at. If we are talking a bank-related entity, it's under a high degree of regulation already today. Whether that's state or federally chartered. And, one of the important messages we are constantly advocating is for a level playing field in the mortgage industry. Like institutions should be under the same set of rules and regulations. So I think there is a portion of the servicer industry currently operating without any sort of meaningful regulation, and that is something the state can probably weigh in.
Bill, Faith.
Just so your listeners understand, the old days where, one of my favorite movies, It's a Wonderful Life, you had Mr. Potter, the conservative old grouchy banker, and you had George Bailey, the savings and loan guy. But in both cases, they had a relationship with their homeowners that they issued a mortgage to for the duration of that mortgage. Well, those days are gone. Everybody knows that when they get a mortgage, it gets sold off, and then it appears to get sold off again. And what normally happens is that the people that end up with the mortgage, whether it's through Fannie Mae or one of the Wall Street outfits, they hire a servicing company to collect that mortgage. And the servicers are paid to do two things. One, to collect those monthly payments, and then to foreclose if the payments stop. They're not paid
to work it out.
Yeah, their stellar customer service record, right? I mean, and they have a terrible customer service record. Anybody that tries to engage with their servicer will find that it makes the BMV look like an efficient operation. I mean, these outfits give people the runaround. You never can get the same person twice. They lose people's records. They provide terrible customer service. I mean, and so putting some regulation on these companies, I mean, that's something I guess Mike and I can agree with. It's not so much the problem of the community bankers. It's not so much the problem of the savings and loans. The smaller outfits that operate in the community that keep the mortgage, service their own mortgages, because they know what's going on. They could talk to the customer. The customer could walk in their front door. They're more apt to do a workout on their own. But it's these big national companies that have no offices in our communities, generally speaking, that are the most difficult to penetrate and work with. So getting some regulation on them is key. That's a key.
And there isn't regulation on them now because they're not actually in under the auspices of a bank.
Right. So they may be an affiliate of the bank. They may be a completely separate corporation. But no, they're not regulated now. In 15 other states, they've recently, in the past several years, have passed regulation on servicers. And that was one of our key reasons for getting involved in this debate to start with, was to push for that. And I do think that provision of House Bill 3 will pass. Another key provision of House Bill 3 that Aaron didn't mention is that it has a counseling component. Foreclosure prevention counselors that have been hired around the state, a number of groups in the Columbus area, Columbus Housing Partnership, Homes on the Hill, ESOP, a number of groups have been providing these services. And people are 60% more likely to get a workout with their servicer if they're assisted by a counselor, because the counselor knows their way around those companies. They have protocols established. They could cut through a lot of the BS inside the company and get positive results for the homeowner. Now, the servicer still has to agree to it. This isn't a mandated situation, but they're able to get workouts done, and that's a key feature of House Bill 3 as well.
But funding's drying up. I don't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but funding's drying up for that. I think the ESOP executive director wasn't in Washington recently asking Congress to refund.
Right. There were a couple different bills that were sort of stimulus-related bills that passed, you know, last year or the year before, actually. They funded counseling services at about $180 million nationally, and that funding has been cut down by two-thirds. So many of these operations that hired up counselors, got them trained, got them working, they're going to be losing their funding this year and or having to scale back significantly.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of the federal funding, there's probably a high degree of likelihood federal funding is going to continue. I mean, how often do you see a government program go away? And definitely all the media attention that continues to be focused on the foreclosure issue, I think it's going to be a priority for the Democrat-controlled federal legislature.
Do you think that kind of counseling is important or not as useful as Bill does think it is?
I think that counseling does serve a purpose. There are various types of counseling. I think there should be more in the way of counseling on the front end of the transaction so that purchasers go into that home ownership open-eyed. I think everybody would benefit from that. But also, I'm a strong advocate of financial literacy. I think we as a state, as a society, need to do a lot more to educate our young people, our children. You know, Junior Achievement has a great program, and I think more schools should be utilizing it so that people develop these habits, become aware of the concepts at a young age. In terms of the counseling, once you're a homeowner and you start to run into trouble, HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Federal Organization, they have a lot of counselors across the country, across the state, that can be very helpful. And if I could just plug them, they've got a great website, www.hud.gov, and they've got a HOPE hotline, toll-free, 888-995-HOPE. They've got a lot of resources out on the website. They have a lot of counselors that troubled homeowners can be put in touch with through that phone number.
Okay. I just want to remind you, we're talking about foreclosures. If you haven't figured it out by now, my guest, Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and also Mike Adelman, Vice President of State Government Relations for the Ohio Bankers League, and also on the phone. If you have a question for State Government Reporter, we have Aaron Marshall from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. All right, so the moratorium's off, and Bill, you've accepted that's probably not going to get through this time.
Right. I mean, the idea that some of the House members had were if we're going to have regulation on servicers and we're going to gear up mediation, we're going to gear up counseling, you know, having a timeout might make sense. But I think Aaron's observation about the Senate is accurate, meaning that they don't want that provision to remain in the bill.
And, Mike, the mediation, you say mediation can work. It can be helpful. Mandatory mediation? That means the banks would have to participate.
I think what I referenced, Ann, was that counseling can be helpful.
Okay, but mediation, you're not so
I think the jury's still out on mediation. As I indicated, the Supreme Court, Ohio Supreme Court, has a program in place. I think it has been effectively used in some counties. But when you're talking about mediation, you know, remember, 5% of the foreclosure filings are answered. I think most homeowners resolve to the fact they cannot make ends meet anymore, and unfortunately cannot remain a homeowner. So I think there's probably some programs that can be expanded in terms at the county level, but to make something mandatory across the state would have huge unintended consequences of slowing the process down further.
If I could just jump in quick on the mediation bill, the homeowner has to respond to the to the foreclosure and has to be involved with the courts to get into the mandatory mediation program. So if they're not answering their letters and they're not, you know, they're just sort of dropping out, then it doesn't go to mediation under that bill.
Okay.
I mean, the real problem with the mediation efforts that have been tried to date and even with some of the counseling efforts is the servicers are unresponsive. They simply don't process requests for a workout. They and then when they send a representative to the court, it's some hired gun lawyer they bring in who says that they're not even authorized to negotiate on behalf of the servicer. So what the mediation bill is trying to get at is you can't do that. If you come to court, you have to be prepared through mediation, negotiating good faith. Now, if the deal isn't acceptable for the lender or the servicer, then they don't have to accept it, obviously. It's not mandating a deal. It's just mandating a discussion. And my view is that if we could avoid foreclosures by working something out at the table, why not do that? And as Aaron pointed out, the borrower has to respond, even if it's a simple letter. Yes, I would like to participate in
right
mediation.
Right off the bat. I mean,
right. And if
it's
they
not like
don't
you put it off for
that.
6 months and then get to do a take back. It's something you have to start doing right off the bat.
Right. And everything they owe, if they miss mortgage payments, you know, you can't typically, you can't pay a partial mortgage payment. They'll just send it back to you. But if so, the late fees, the past mortgage payments, everything is on the table to be negotiated out through the mediation process. And both sides have to agree or the foreclosure will proceed.
Mike?
But going back to the servicer piece, I think it's important to keep in mind who does that servicer essentially work for? They're working for investors. And though that may be a financial institution or the Chinese government, in many instances, it's your 401k. It's your pension fund. So I think everybody is really concerned about how they are personally doing, how their assets are holding up, their investment portfolios. So I think we need to be very cautious as to what our expectations are of servicers to take a haircut and break that revenue stream to those entities.
We have to take another short break. We're talking about the foreclosure situation with Bill Faith. He is the executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Also, Mike Adelman, vice president of state government relations for the Ohio Bankers League, and Aaron Marshall, Cleveland Plain Dealer State House reporter. Well, I got some calls I want to get to, and I've got some emails I want to get to as soon as we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
In 1987, President Reagan said the now famous words, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall."
Well, Gorbachev was a little bit irritated because he felt that he had already done a lot and was doing a lot to help end the Cold War.
On the next Fresh Air, David Hoffman, author of The Dead Hand, the untold story of the Cold War arms race and its dangerous legacy. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email to sign up for one of WOSU's e-newsletters.
Support for WOSU comes from SAFI, Specialized Alternatives for Families and Youth, envisioning the day when every child is part of a loving family and is able to reach his or her greatest potential. Information is online at safy.org.
A winter storm warning in effect until 6 o'clock Tuesday morning. 2 to 4 inches of snow this afternoon, and then another 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight, and we could see another 1 to 2 inches of snow for Tuesday as well. Currently 24 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light snow falling. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. The program continues. Good morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the foreclosure crisis with Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Also, Mike Adelman, Vice President of State Government Relations for the Ohio Bankers League. And Aaron Marshall, he's a Cleveland Plain Dealer State House reporter. I'm going to take some calls now. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm glad you're doing this show because the mainstream media has acted as if this is last year's news, and it doesn't affect us now, but it is affecting a lot of families here.
Yeah, you had an interesting question about catastrophic illness, and shouldn't there be some sort of...
Why can't there be riders on... You know, years ago I took a loan from my credit union, and they asked me, well, do you want this rider on your loan that if you get sick or can't make the payment, we'll make it for you? And it costs, you know, an additional $6 or $7 a month on the loan. Why can't that be written in to mortgage loans and people would be paying into funds in case they get unemployed or they have a catastrophic illness.
Okay.
Why can't they have that? And can your banker answer that, please?
Well, okay. Well, go ahead, Mike. And thanks for your call, Peter.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks, Peter. That's a great question. Actually, I do not have an answer for that. I'm trying to think back to Senate Bill 185 and concerns with different fees that were tacked on to mortgages. And I'm looking to Bill to see if he's got some background.
Well, it is a very good point. A lot of borrowers will be required to take out private mortgage insurance when they get a loan. If their loan-to-value is high enough, they'll be required to take out that mortgage insurance. The thing is, it doesn't really protect the borrower. It protects the bank or the lender, right? It's really insurance for them. So
if you go into foreclosure, they get their money.
They get a portion of what you owe
as
part of the settlement. But in Great Britain, they actually do mortgage insurance in much the way the caller's talking about, where virtually everybody buys mortgage insurance. But what it does is it protects the borrower in cases where they're unemployed temporarily, they may be sick, other kind of sort of unforeseen circumstance. And so they would then – their mortgage would be paid by the insurance company for up to a year is the way that insurance works. You can buy that in the States, but it's pretty rare. It's often not offered.
Okay, let's take another call this time. Eileen, you're on the air with the Franklin County Foreclosure Mediation.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I want to say that all of your speakers are right on in terms of the kinds of situations that are bringing people into foreclosure. We're following the Supreme Court model in Franklin County. We're jointly funded by the prosecutor and the treasurer, and we received referrals to mediation in about 20% of the filings last year. And that's 20% of all filings. So if you eliminate commercial filings, really getting a high rate of return, people asking for mediation in residential foreclosure cases. Two aspects of our program that we think are really important is that the court has ordered everybody to participate. We have the servicer or lender on the phone in every mediation with their counsel. And the other thing is that our participants are required to use one of the five HUD counseling agencies to get that counseling before they come to mediation. So we've seen about 30% of the people we've actually mediated with stay in their homes. And I think we're going to see as the cases go through the system that even after mediation, people are going to continue to work with each other to get good results. The judges and our funders really wanted us to be able to work with people for decent, dignified exit strategies. And that's happening, too.
Eileen, isn't there an income limit to the HUD help?
No.
Okay.
There's an income limit if you want to try and get legal aid representation.
Okay.
And there's a drastic need for more pro bono attorneys because legal aid is overwhelmed. But there's no limit on referral or services from a HUD-approved counseling agency. And people who are experiencing difficulty can get to the HUD-approved counseling agencies by calling our county information line 211.
Okay, 211. And also, is the key word in all of this mandated by a judge? Or that's a phrase?
I don't think
mandated?
So.
Mandated? Okay.
I think what we really want to see are more people getting to the HUD agencies, beginning to deal with the folks they have contact with at the lender servicers, and if they're not making progress, get folks to mediation before the lawsuit is filed.
And also, is it too late if you have been ignoring those foreclosure notifications? Is it too late after that, or can you go in anytime?
Well, you can ask the court, and there's a form motion available on the treasurer's website, and at that time you have to file a motion. With the request, it's just returning a form, but with the motion, the borrower has to file that. Then it's up to the judge. The judges have referred cases on their own. They have accepted those motions. Of course, it's much more difficult once the judgment has been granted or the sale is set. But we have seen some property is withdrawn from sale and people go forward with mediation. But that's the judge's decision.
Okay. Eileen, thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate your participation.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And if I could, the effort that the Franklin County folks put forth works. I mean, and it provides a good model for what could happen all over the state. But mediation programs in many counties are non-existent. They're not in place. I mean, so Franklin County is fortunate that the local officials had the foresight to do it. The treasurer's office, Mr. Leonard, as well as the prosecutor's office, participate in helping to fund mediation because they get that if you do mediation and reduce the docket, even somewhat, it really keeps the courts from being clogged with these foreclosure cases. But most counties don't have the resources available, and they've yet to develop the kind of excellent model that Franklin County has. If we had a state program established that was established in statute and provided a way for the counties to pay for it, which is another key feature of the bill, then we'd see these kinds of efforts grow, affect more of the clientele, and affect more counties. And more counties would be able to establish such programs.
But, Bill, there already is a state program. The Supreme Court has their program, and then last session, House Bill 138 codified that program.
Well, but the program isn't funded.
Right.
Purely voluntary effort, and if the county, if the court system, if the judges, the prosecutor, the county treasurer, anybody wants to try to get a program like that going, they have to find a way to pay for it. And right now, with county governments strapped for cash in most cases, our county, Franklin County, is in better shape than most counties. That proves to be a significant barrier of having a meaningful mediation program established.
But I think a lot of the counties already have an ADR fee built on to their filings. So they're collecting some amount of money already that is going to defray those costs.
My understanding is where the big problem is in the sparsely populated counties where there's not the economies of scale, they're not accumulating the kind of funding that you would need to support some kind of a process like
that. Well, even in some large counties, they have not. Montgomery County, one of the Dayton area mm-hmm. that's had some of the biggest numbers of foreclosures of any of our big counties, they've yet to establish a mediation program because they're strapped for cash.
We're strapped for time, and I want to get to some of these emails. They're just a piling up. From a listener, they want to know again, what is the argument against renters' protection? They write, I can't imagine that anyone, Republican or Democrat, would object. So the point with renters' protection is, here's a person through no fault of their own are finding out when they slap the sticker on their door that they're being evicted. Maybe their landlord has already cashed their rent check for that month. Maybe the landlord is already doesn't have the money to even get their down payment or deposit, the security deposit back. So they're left with nothing. And I've written about this before. What about that, Mike?
And I think those truly are the victims in the foreclosure process. And we have no qualms with making the landlord responsible for notifying those borrowers. I mean, that just makes common sense.
But
now, where we had concerns, we worked very closely with Representative Celeste on his legislation, Senator Dale Miller from Cleveland as well with his bill. And I think a lot of it is now moot because there's federal law that was put in place last year touching on the notification piece as well as on the continuation of that mortgage agreement following foreclosure.
Aaron Marshall from the Plain Dealer, any hope for the renter's bill?
I don't think so.
Same thing.
I agree that with the emailer there that at first blush it does seem like something that you could get both sides of the aisle to agree on, but we haven't seen it so far.
Bill?
Well, in some of the more recent hearings in the Senate, I think a number of the senators get it, that we ought to have better notification. And because renters pay, if they're under a lease, they're required to pay even for the month that the property goes to foreclosure. So we want to make sure that the tenancy survives the foreclosure. Now, we've agreed in this legislation to have that convert to a month-to-month tenancy. So if the lender comes in and gets the property at sheriff's sale, they can go ahead and file an eviction or inform the tenant that they have 30 days to vacate the property. But at least they'd have 30 days to look for a new place to live, and they wouldn't be out, which in some cases could be $2,500 or more to try to, in terms of relocating without any notice.
That seems fair enough, I suppose, that when you're already getting something at a sheriff's sale, it's usually cut rate. It's usually a pretty good investment if you can afford it. What about that, Mike?
I think the only concern that we would have has to do with that property going into sale. If there are tenants, that could have a chilling effect on the sale if the subsequent owner has some plans with that property, maybe wants to turn a duplex into a single-family unit, and they've got to continue on that agreement for a period of time. I think there could be some problems at sale. But the question that I continue to ask is this bill necessary at the state level now that we have a federal law in place?
Well, the federal law sunsets. So at the end of 2011, that law no longer exists. And that bill provides for the tenants to have the remainder of their lease honored or 90 days, whichever.
It's a little more heavy-handed.
Liberal.
Yeah. Oh, it's more well.
More liberal.
More heavy-handed from Mike's point of view.
It's quite liberal.
But that's a temporary law. The notification requirements in that law are weak. Ours with the state law are actually better, so the tenants are more liable to be given notice. And, you know, long term, we think converting it to a month-to-month so the tenant knows at least for 30 days post-foreclosure they'll be able to remain and look for a new place. Because you never know. All the way up to that foreclosure finding in court, anything could happen. That property may or may not actually end up in foreclosure because the owner may work something out with the lender.
We have an email from a listener. They write, when a foreclosed house goes to sheriff's sale, it is not possible for an interested buyer to get access to the house. This rule eliminates quote-unquote ordinary people who might be interested in purchasing such a house for their own residence, who would be able to make a large investment in a sight unseen property. Can't this rule be changed?
Actually, Ann, that's a great question. And House Bill 138 from last session does allow the county sheriff to hold open houses on foreclosed properties. So not sure where this listener's calling in from, but maybe they need to inquire with the county and see if that could be possible.
Okay. An email from Brad. It sounds like some of the ideas being suggested will drag the foreclosure process out even further. If this is the case and the foreclosure process becomes longer, won't that hurt school districts and house prices even more? Well, I guess that kind of depends on if the property's not occupied. Does the bank pay taxes on it?
No, the property taxes just accrue.
Right.
The answer would be no. So everybody loses it when properties go to foreclosure. Property values decline further. There's studies that show that neighboring properties' values will decline by thousands of dollars if there's a presence of foreclosures in their neighborhood. School districts suffer then. Property taxes are lowered because evaluations are down. So if we could salvage, you know, with reasonable interventions, prevent unnecessary foreclosures from going forward, it's really in everybody's interest for this to occur. The investors make their money, the homeowner keeps their home, but the community stays stronger, the neighborhood stays stronger. So I think it's worth trying some efforts to prevent unnecessary foreclosures.
Okay, let's take a phone call now from Jan. Jan, you're on there. You want to talk about that county program with HUD?
Yes. Eileen had mentioned calling 211 to get to the HUD agency. Mm-hmm. 211 is a 24/7 information and referral line.
Right.
And the reason the county is using 211 is that people can get other kinds of assistance that way, too. Chances are, if they're going to foreclosure, they're having trouble paying gas bills and electric bills, and 211 can help find resources for those things, too.
Thank you, Jan. Thanks for calling. Again, that number is 211. I read something interesting recently that a lot of people aren't paying on their mortgages now. They're instead paying on their credit card bills because that's what they're buying their groceries with. That so many people are getting so hard up because of unemployment or other things like health problems and that sort of thing, that they have to keep their credit cards usable to just survive. And that, Mike, what about that?
I think that's a fascinating stat. I've seen some articles on that recently as well, and that just blows my mind. I mean, the common sentiment is you take care of the higher monthly bills first, your mortgage, your car payment, and things like that. You don't want to lose that roof over your house. But I think with the mixed messages out there, it's creating that moral hazard I referenced earlier, that it's easy to walk away from that house.
Well, that brings me to an email from another person. I can't see all of it, though. There we go. To the gentleman from the Ohio Bankers League. What does morality have to do with walking away from a bad investment? He's talking nonsense. We live in a market economy. Do you understand what the emailer is talking about exactly there, Bill?
I do. I absolutely do, because that's what the banks and lenders did. They issued these mortgages without due regard to the borrower's ability to repay. That's what they did. And that was true for some very, very large companies like Countrywide Mortgage, like AmeriQuest. You know, and Mike is in this difficult position. He actually represents a lot of decent community banks, savings and loans, and others that didn't engage in this behavior. Right. But a lot of them did. A lot of these companies did. And they made that calculus that they can make a lot of money off of originating these mortgages, and the future will take care of itself. Well, I think homeowners need to look at their own situation and do what's best for them financially as well. I mean, that's what the people on the other side of the table are doing. If it's good enough for them, why isn't it good enough for the homeowner?
You know, Mike, I remember back in the 90s when the legislation was working its way through. I think it was during the Clinton administration in Washington, to relax the regulations to allow these non-banking entities to get involved in the mortgage business. And I remember getting a visit from your counterpart at the time. It was called the Ohio Bankers Association, I think, at the time. And they were opposed to those kind of changes. So would you be for changing that back?
Well, Ann, those are great questions. I mean, we're seeing that at the federal level right now. I mean, there's significant regulatory restructuring underway, and what we support is that level playing field that I referenced earlier. As Bill indicated, most of the mortgage industry has gotten away from old Potterville, It's a Wonderful Life example. That's still alive and well, though, in a lot of communities across the state. However, regulatory reform is in the works right now, and changes are coming. And it only makes sense for those non-regulated entities that are in this line of work should be playing under the same rules. That protects borrowers. That protects the legitimate lenders as well.
Hey, Bill, I've got about 20, 30 seconds left. I want to give you the last say.
Well, I think everybody should encourage their state senators to pass practical steps like some basic tenant protection. Find a way to fund housing counseling, foreclosure prevention counseling, mediation, and regulating servicers. Those are the issues that will make a difference, and they're practical, common sense approaches to this problem.
Mike, I've got about 10 seconds.
We've got to make sure that legislation does not delay the process further. That will make it more impossible for people to buy homes in the future. Those are the people I'm trying to protect.
Okay, my thanks to Aaron Marshall of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Aaron, thanks for being so patient there on the phone.
Thank you, Ann.
And also Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and Mike Edelman of the Ohio Bankers League. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.